following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
You know, we are not a patient people. We live in a society that's all about instant gratification. We want what we want, we want it when we want it, and we don't want to have to wait for it. We sit around eating Insta potatoes, we prepare it in our Insta pots while we scroll through our Instagram. I mean, we just do not like to wait. My kids tell me I'm old, but I grew up in a time, and it's going to be hard for you guys to believe this, okay? Because it's so different than the way it is today. But I grew up in a time where if you wanted to watch something on TV, you had to wait a whole week for the next episode to come out. And then on top of that, you had to plan to be in a specific place at a specific time so you could turn on that TV and watch that episode. And if you missed it, well, you just missed it. Then VCRs came along. Nowadays, if we want to watch something, we just log on to our streaming service and we watch it whenever we want to, on demand. In fact, there's some series you can sit there and you can binge watch an entire season in one sitting. We don't like to wait for anything. So what do you do when you finally say, "Yes, Lord, I am ready to serve you. I want to do great things for you." And you're excited and eager to get started. And God says, "Great. Now wait." We don't like to wait for anything. Listen, when God calls a person to serve, there's often a time of preparation. God wants to match our zeal and our enthusiasm with spiritual maturity. And that often involves a process of tempering and testing and training to prepare us and grow us into the right kind of people that can fulfill His will. Over the past few weeks, we've been talking about how God rejected King Saul from being the king over ancient Israel, mainly because Saul's rebellious heart was inclined away from God. And then God sent His prophet Samuel to this distant, obscure village called Bethlehem to find a person after His own heart whose heart was inclined towards Him. Samuel was directed to the family of a man named David. David was a young shepherd boy, and the least likely candidate to be king. In fact, his own dad didn't even think enough to invite him to the meeting where the family's going to have dinner with this great, well-known prophet. Yet when Samuel finally did lay eyes on young David, God nudged him and said, "This is the guy. He's the one." Now, most scholars think that David was about 15 years old when that happened. Think back to when you were 15. Okay, some of you are having to look ahead to that, but most of us can look back on that day. If a famous prophet showed up at your house to anoint you with oil and say, "You're going to be the next person in charge," how many of us would have packed our bags immediately and set out thinking about how we're going to decorate the palace? History tells us from the time Samuel anointed David until he finally sat on the throne of Israel for the entire nation, it was nearly 15 years. How many of us are willing to wait 15 days, much less 15 years, for God to bring about what He was planning? Now, and this wasn't an easy 15 years either. There were a lot of great victories and a lot of great setbacks. But through it all, David remained faithful, and God remained with David the entire time, shaping him, preparing him for the role to which God had selected him. There's a lot we can learn from David's story about patiently waiting for God as we go through God's school of preparation. We've got several lessons here in the immediate aftermath of what happened right after David was anointed as king. We find that in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 14 through 23. While you're waiting for God's call to be fulfilled, here's lesson number one: stick close to God in order to stay protected from dark influences. In verse 14, we read, "Now the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord terrorized him. Saul's servants then said to him, 'Behold, now an evil spirit from God is terrorizing you.'" As the Hebrew scholar Robert Alters pointed out, as the Spirit of the Lord descended on David, it departed from Saul. Actually, the verb tense in the Hebrew suggests that God's Spirit had already departed from Saul before David was anointed as the next king. Some scholars suggest that that departure took place not long after God's final rejection of Saul's kingship that we read about in 1 Samuel 15. Saul's actions made it clear he had no respect for God's authority, so God made it clear he saw no future in Saul's reign. Distancing himself from God, hear me now, opened Saul up to some dark, troubling influences. You hear that? When we distance ourselves from God, we are leaving the door wide open for all kinds of stuff to come flowing into our lives. And in place of God's Spirit, we're told in verse 14, what an evil spirit from the Lord terrified Saul. Now, stop right there. I don't know about you, but when I read that, when I first read that, that was like, whoa, wait a minute. Are we really to believe that a holy, righteous God actually sent an evil spirit against a person? Is there something about that that just doesn't quite sit well with you? Well, hang on. To answer that question correctly, we got to keep in mind some important things here. Okay, one, we got to keep in mind the description of the spirit as evil. Some concepts, when you're going from Hebrew to English, don't translate very well, okay? The best explanation I've heard about what is going on here came from Dr. Tim Mackey. He's the theological director for something called the Bible Project. Great resource on YouTube, by the way, if you want to check it out. But I got a chance to hear him explain this a couple weeks ago on a podcast. And he describes how this particular Hebrew adjective that's used here, ra'ah, is not used to describe the Spirit's essence. Okay, in other words, what the Spirit was in itself, but rather the outcome of the Spirit's actions. So it's not the Spirit that necessarily was evil by nature, but it's a Spirit whose presence resulted in what we would call evil or a bad outcome for Saul. So this wasn't like God sending a demon necessarily. We got to remember the nature of the evil here. We also have to remember this, the sovereignty of God. See, sometimes we slip in this sloppy mode of thinking where we kind of think of the universe divided up between God and the forces of light on one side and Satan and the forces of darkness on the other, and they're kind of evenly matched, and you know the outcome of the game is in doubt, okay? That is not at all how the Bible describes reality. In reality, God is sovereign over all, and the eventual outcome of this battle is predetermined. God allows us a measure of free will, as he does with all the creatures in his creation. And that creates the possibility of genuine love. But it also creates the possibility that his creatures could use that free will to do some ungodly things. And that's what Saul had done here. But despite that, God maintains overall authority over his creation. And so we could say that nothing comes into our lives, good or bad, that hasn't first passed muster with God. Now, why would God allow bad things to come into our lives? If he loves us, if he's a good God, why would he allow bad things to come into our lives? Because God sometimes allows those things to come in order to further his plan for the greater good. Maybe it's something he's trying to do in us. He wants to test us. He wants to train us. He wants to do something to triumph through us, as some people have said. Or maybe through us, he's going to further the ball down the field to fulfill his plan. But anything that comes into our lives has first of all come through God's grid. And that ought to provide a measure of comfort for us, especially when we're facing difficult times. And then the third thing we got to remember here is human responsibility. So the nature of evil, the sovereignty of God, and human responsibility. Because we are free creatures, we have to accept responsibility for our actions. We can't do like Flip Wilson used to do and say, the devil made me do it. Because Saul had freely rejected God's authority, a righteous God was justified in allowing judgment to come upon Saul in the form of this dark spirit. And this spirit prompted a lot of negative impacts on Saul's life, as we read later. He suffered from depression. He suffered from discontent. He suffered from paranoia. He suffered from violent outbursts. And some episodes that just kind of border on insanity. Now, this is not the claim that all mental illness is the result of spiritual oppression, okay? I'm not trying to say that. But spiritual oppression definitely has or had a basis for Saul's torments. staying close to God may not keep any of these things from coming into your life, but it can insulate you from these spiritual attacks and provide resources to sustain you when they do occur. And I'm here to tell you, I've experienced this personally. I don't know what it is, but anytime I'm prepared to bring a message that explicitly presents the gospel in a clear way, literally all hell will break loose that morning before church. You can almost set a watch by it. It's like there's something that wants to prevent that message from going out. I could tell you stories of just weird stuff that happens whenever people are trying to do what God's called them to do. David wrote in Psalm 23, verse 4, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." Anybody ever been to the valley of the shadow of death? There's a few of us that have walked that valley, right? You know what it feels like when those shadows are closing in. David said, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil." Why? He says, "You were with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." So we may go through valleys of shadows, but if you stick close to God, you never walk those valleys alone. But Saul had put distance between himself and God. The Apostle Paul encourages in Hebrews 6, verse 16, "Take up the shield of faith," right, "with which you will be able to extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one." So keep that shield up. And when the enemy shoots those arrows at you, you meet him with the shield of faith. Number two, the second lesson, seek the Lord through worship to stave off negativity. So in verse 15, "Behold, now an evil spirit from God is terrorizing you. Let our Lord now command your servants who are before you. Let them seek a man who is a skillful player on the harp, and it shall come about when the evil spirit from God is on you, he shall play the harp with his hand, and you will be well." So Saul said to his servants, provide for me now one who can play well and bring him to me. So when Saul's attendants perceived what was going on with their boss, they say, "King, you need some help." And what they proposed was kind of an ancient form of musical therapy. That's a thing. Did you know that? There are therapists who actually use music to help people. I had a friend in high school. That's the field she got into. We'd never heard of it back then in the 80s, but it's an actual recognized form of therapy. The ancients may not have had our understanding of psychology, but they knew from experience that music has powerful spiritual and emotional effects. Listen, when you're tempted by doubts or depression, try turning on some music that prompts you to praise God. And we live in a world where you don't have to go very far to find good music. Now, make sure you find some good stuff, because there's a lot of spiritual junk food out there, right? If all you do is eat stuff from McDonald's, then what's going to happen to your body? Not going to be very healthy, right? So make sure, same thing with your soul, make sure you're feeding your soul a lot of good spiritual worship. Good, godly, biblically grounded music. Colossians 3:16 tells us, "Let the word of Christ dwell richly among you in all wisdom, teaching, and admonishing one another through psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts." Some of you say, "Well, I don't like to sing." Sing anyway. Sing in the shower where nobody else can hear you, but sing to God. Martin Luther, the great reformer, once wrote, "I have no use for cranks who despise music, because it is a gift from God. Music drives away the devil and makes people joyful. They forget thereby all wrath, unchastity, arrogance, and the like. Next, after theology, I give to music the highest place and the greatest honor." In response to this passage in 1 Samuel 16, Chuck Swindoll wrote, "A spirit-filled saint is a song-filled saint." He said, "Your melody is broadcast right into heaven, live, where God's antenna is always receptive and where the soothing strains of your song are always appreciated." See, God doesn't care if you can put notes together without clashing. He's more interested in your heart. So turn to worship. Turn to music. Saul listened to his advisors, and this strategy apparently provided a measure of relief. Spoiler alert, this is how David ended up in Saul's royal court, okay? We get to verse 23, and we read there, "So it came about whenever the evil spirit from God came to Saul, David would take the harp and play it with his hand, and Saul would be refreshed and well, and the evil spirit would depart from him." So whenever those dark thoughts threaten to overwhelm you, turn on some good worship music and start praising the Lord. Now, while you're worshiping and waiting, sit tight and trust in God's people, God's plan, and God's timing. Verse 18. Then one of the young men said, "Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite, who is a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, one prudent in speech, and a handsome man whom the Lord is with." Saul had barely formed the search committee when one of his young advisors piped up and said, "Hey, I know a guy. I know a guy." How many times have you found yourself in an uncertain situation and you fretted and stressed over how in the world is God going to work this out? Okay, you ever been there? It amazes me how often God has his people perfectly placed in situations to further his plan. Okay, some of the best opportunities I have ever experienced were not situations I went looking for. There were situations that came looking for me. My very first hands-on ministry job was a summer internship with the Hamilton County Baptist Association the summer after my first year of college. I barely knew what the Hamilton County Baptist Association was. My pastor came up to me during that spring semester, and he said, "Hey, I just want to let you know, I recommended you for this new job over at the association." Okay. Sure enough, a few days later, this packet showed up in the mail, had an application in it, so I filled the application out, sent it in. Didn't hear anything back for a while. The semester was winding down. I needed to make some plans, and so I started calling the contact of the association, a guy by the name of Dwayne Highlander. His son is actually serving on the county commission right now, but Dwayne Highlander was in charge of this program, and I could never catch him in the office. And so, we were getting closer to the end of the semester. I'm thinking, well, I might as well let the restaurant where I've been working know that I'm going to be there for this summer, right? And then I was involved in something called the Baptist Student Union back then on campus. We call it BCM today, Baptist Campus Ministries. But I was in the BSU Center, and one of my buddies walked up to me. He was a musician, and he said, "Hey, I need some help." So I was supposed to sing at a revival this week at this little inner city church, but something's come up and I can't make it. So can you go sing in my place? Now, he must have been pretty desperate because he came to me. I guess everybody else turned him down. But I said, "Okay, sure, I'll go sing at this place." He gave me the address. So the night of this appointment came, and I found the little inner city church down the Highland Park area, and I was there. Guess who the revival preacher was? Dwayne Highlander. And so that night, I met him, and a few days later, I get the call, "Hey, we want you to come work for us this summer." So I ended up working in that program for 2 summers, getting a lot of hands-on experience in missions work, different kinds of missions work, and learning how Baptists work together in associations. Guess one of the reasons I'm such a big fan of Baptist associations, because I've seen up front and personal the kind of things we can all do when we work together, and we don't care who gets the credit, okay? As a bonus, the first time our team of interns got together, I met this little blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl who was going to Belmont, who was going to have a very profound impact on my life over the next few decades, although I didn't know it at the time. Fast forward a couple of years. Another spring semester is winding down, okay? I've already told the Hamilton County Baptist Association I'm going to be back for a third summer, okay? And by that time, Melody and I had started dating. So we had to go into Dwayne's office, Mr. Highlander's office, and say, "Hey, by the way, just want to let you know, during the school year, we started seeing each other, so we completely understand if that's not kosher." And we worked it out, so we were going to be on separate teams, so there wouldn't be a problem. And so we'd already gone through that. And then I walked into the BSU Center again, and the BSU director pulled me aside and said, "Hey, listen, I got someone I want you to meet. There's a pastor here from North Georgia. He's looking for somebody to be his summer youth pastor at his church. And he's interviewing some guys today, and I want him to talk to you." And I was like, "Brother, I've already got something lined up for this summer. I'm going back to work for the association. I kind of, got this cool gig going." And he insisted. And so I think, okay, I'll humor him, and I'll go in and sit with this guy. Now, what I found out later was that this pastor had a very short list of people he wanted to talk to. He was talking to all comers who would go and sit with him in the spare office that day. But he had a small list of people that he was really interested in. My name was on that list, apparently. So much to my surprise, I found myself serving as a youth pastor that summer. So then I had to call the association back and say, "Oh, by the way, after all, I'm not coming back this summer." I don't know what was scarier, telling Dwayne Highlander I wasn't coming back or having to tell Melody I wasn't coming back. We got through it. I ended up serving at that church for 2.5 years. I learned a lot about ministry. That practical experience made my seminary preparation much more productive. Because I was sitting in class with guys who had no clue, and I'm sitting there going, I already know, you know, they thought they knew all the answers. I knew some of the questions because I'd already had to work through some of this stuff. But I'm so thankful for that opportunity. That set me up for the next big surprise in my life, okay? After graduating college, getting married, we moved to New Orleans to go to seminary. And Melody already had a teaching job lined up. So I'm thinking, you know, with my experience, I shouldn't have any trouble finding a church position. But in the meantime, I need to have some stuff, some cash coming in. So I'm just going to put an application in with the campus. And I don't know, I'd be happy to sweep floors in the cafeteria. I don't care. Just have a little money coming in until I find a church position, okay? So I turned in the application, didn't hear anything for a couple weeks. And then I get a phone call. And I kind of knew this campus. They were affiliated with a Christian radio station. Some guys from the radio station called me up and said, hey, listen, we are in the process of reorganizing this entire operation. We're going to try to make it a little more professional. And we saw in your application that you've got a degree in communications and broadcasting. I said, well, yeah, I had never intended on using it. The reason I had that major, a couple different reasons, but none of them had related to, I had the burning desire to work in that field. And besides, my preparation was more in television production than it was in radio. I had one semester of radio training. But anyway, they talked me into coming and trying out and meeting with them. So next thing I know, I'm on the air doing radio. That led to a 14-year career involving two different stations that allowed me to experience ministry in a completely different and unexpected way. I got to take part in some very unique and exciting projects that made a difference in the communities where they took place. I got to meet some very interesting people. I never forget the time I got to interview Franklin Graham before Promise Keepers Conference in New Orleans. Things like that. I learned a lot of valuable skills that I still use down to this day. But after about 14 years, I'm sitting there going, Lord, you know, I kind of resigned myself that maybe God's going to keep me in this because he was blessing, great things were happening. You know, and he hadn't opened the opportunity for me to go back into church work. I'm thinking, well, maybe this is what you got for me, Lord. I still have this question, though. You know, God, why did you send me to school to get all this education, to learn how to be a pastor, if you got me working spinning records? Which I did a lot more than spin records, but you get the idea. Well, then God surprised me again. Because along the way, we had always made the point to be active in a local church. I'd been working for this radio network based up in Virginia for about 4 years. We've been active in a church there in Lynchburg. I was running the college ministry there and getting to deal with all these kids from Liberty University and Lynchburg College and all these other places that were right there around the city. And one day the pastor walks up out of the blue and says, hey, you ever thought about going back into church work? Okay, well. So we started talking. Next thing I know, I'm serving on that church staff full time. I spent 5 years. My official title was Minister of Education, Young Adults, and Children. Okay, I called it Minister of Everything Else. I was basically an associate pastor at this decent-sized church in Lynchburg, Virginia. And, man, God allowed us to be part of some really, really special days. We loved our time there at that church. To make it short, I spent 5 incredible years serving that church, learning new skills and deepening my understanding of ministry. Now, I tell you all that not to brag about my biography, but simply to say this, very little of that was according to my plan, okay? That's not to say I've always just kind of sat back and just waited for God to drop stuff in my lap. I'm a firm believer in what Jesus taught us to do in Matthew chapter 7, ask, seek, and knock. And there have been a lot of occasions in my life where I've gone asking and knocking and seeking. And sometimes those doors open, sometimes they don't. Sometimes when those doors open, great blessings have resulted. In fact, one of those blessings of knocking on a door was coming here 16 years ago. In Psalm 31, verses 14 to 15, David says this, but as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. I say to you that you are my God. My times are in your hand. Most of the best opportunities I've ever experienced were situations that I'm convinced were orchestrated by God. So if you want to serve God, make yourself available, but trust in God's timing. Trust in God's plan. Trust in the people that God has placed in your path. Okay, and while you're waiting, and this is very important, serve faithfully where you've been planted. Look at verse 19. So Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, send me your son David who is with the flock. So according to verse 19, what had David done after Samuel anointed him to be the next king? He went back to the sheep. That was what he knew. He went back to serving the flock. He returned to what he knew and kept doing it faithfully until God revealed the next step. Somebody commented this to me after the service last Sunday. Said, you know, being a shepherd may have been the best training David could get in order to be a king and to lead people. And I was like, that's a great insight. While you're waiting on God to show you the next step, find ways to serve faithfully right where He's placed you at the moment. One of the most shocking things about seminary was the number of people on our campus who never got involved in a local church. Now, thankfully, they were not the majority, but there was a noticeable group of people. And it was almost like, well, if they weren't getting paid to do ministry, they weren't going to get involved. I don't care how many degrees they may have had or how many A's they may have made, okay? In my opinion, those students failed in their preparation for ministry because they didn't get involved. Some of those valuable lessons in ministry I've ever learned came through getting involved and volunteering to do whatever needed to be done in a local church. This is one of the reasons when we nominate men to be deacons, we tell you, look for men who are already doing the job even though they don't have the title. Look for men who are already showing up. Look for men who are already serving others. Look for men who are already setting the example of Christian maturity and character. Okay? Don't ever be the kind of church that says, well, you know, so-and-so's a good guy, but I wish we could get him more involved in church. I tell you what, let's make him a deacon. That'll get him more involved. No! It's not fair to you or to him. But look for men who are already demonstrating those kind of qualities. They're already bubbling to the top. That's the kind of people we need to be deacons. And even if you're merely a volunteer or a lay leader, before you can do great things for God, you have to learn to be content with doing the small things that few people will ever notice. As somebody has said, if service is beneath you, leadership is beyond you. And I believe that is so true. And then finally, stay humble enough to serve those you've been sent to replace. Look at verse 20. Jesse took a donkey loaded with bread and a jug of wine and a young goat and sent them to Saul by David his son. Then David came to Saul and attended him. Saul loved him greatly and he became his armor bearer. And Saul sent to Jesse saying, let David now stand before me, for he has found favor in my sight. Now, David didn't come into Saul's palace with a chip on his shoulder. Instead, he came in bearing gifts to honor Saul. I mean, you don't go in front of the king empty-handed, right? Now, there's a whole lesson here in the things that Jesse sent. Remember, they were coming from Bethlehem. So in the Hebrew, he sent him a donkey of bread, okay? That's literally what it says, a donkey of bread. Now, that doesn't mean he was made of bread. That would be something, wouldn't it? But this donkey was loaded up. Now think about this for a second. Do you know what the name Bethlehem means? Hebrew is bait is house. Lehem is bread. He's sending him bread from the house of bread. Okay? Bethlehem may have been a small out-of-the-way place, but how much you want to bet it was known for its bakery. To be known as the house of bread. He loads his donkey up with all these baked goods and sends him off with his son to the palace. Also, it's interesting to note that when Saul was on his way to the palace after he had been anointed, three men met him, each one carrying a gift, bread, wine, and a goat. Notice the parallelism there. God is recreating the same path that brought Saul into the palace. But David shows up and he has these gifts to honor the king. And what does he do? Hey, Saul. Yeah. You know who I am? I'm the guy that's going to take your place. Yeah, that's right. God said so. What are you going to do about it? The scripture says David came in and he attended him. That means he served him. And he must have served well because he got promoted quickly. He came in to be the court musician. And before you turn around, he's Saul's armor bearer. That means he is working directly with the king. He is following the king around. He is ready to dress the king up in his armor whenever he needs it. That means that as an armor bearer, he's going to be in close proximity to the king, especially during times of crisis. Man, what a way to learn how to be a king than to get to follow the king around and observe what he does and also to learn what not to do in Saul's case. You see what's happening here? God orchestrated the circumstances so that this young shepherd boy from the backside of nowhere can get this education and preparation, the best training possible to learn how to rule a nation. And when the time was right and David was ready, it was God who opened the door to elevate David to the throne. Do you want to serve God? Trust in God's plan. Trust in God's timing. And while you're waiting, look around and see what needs to be done and get busy doing it. Whatever it is. And when you've passed through God's school of preparation, then He will be able to do great things through you.
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautix.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thank you for listening.